It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And it is a glorious Saturday morning on the First Coast, which you probably heard already if you were listening to Howard and Angela. And if not, if you've stepped outside, you know. And if you haven't, open your door.
It is. It's beautiful. Really nice out.
I mean, this is the 23rd of August. And it seems to me, I've been here 20-some, 3-whatever years, and some summers before that. It seems to me this time of year was always miserable. And it's been hot here and there, but it hasn't been miserable.
Yesterday was really hot, a bad one. Yeah. But in general, outside of the rain, which has been kind of annoying, right, this has been a great summer.
Yeah, it really has. It's been my favorite one that I can remember ever. And the hurricanes are going south of us and east of us and north of us and all that knock on whatever. Although, for those of you who've been around a few years, you remember that when we got hit a couple of times, it was October. So we're a little premature, perhaps. But whatever. That has little to do with finance. First off, welcome back, all the regulars. We appreciate very much the fact that you've been around these 6.5 years that we've been doing this. That's hard enough to believe right there. And if you're new to the show, if you're coming into town, if you're one of those license plates we see everywhere we go that are from states other than this one, and you happen to have heard it or it just came on the air or whatever, then stick around for an hour and we'll try to help you learn some things. And better yet, we'll talk the whole hour about what we want to talk about unless you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. Or 222-TALK, and at that point, we will switch the discussion over to whatever it is on your mind. It can be anything to do with money, and money affects almost anything. So if we don't know the answer, we'll certainly get it for you by the next show. And remember, there are no dumb questions. There are easier questions for us, and there are harder ones, but we love the easy ones because you make us look good. That's your job. Our job is to be here. Anyway, back to what happened. It was not a stellar week, but when you look at the world this past week and look at the market, to me, they were completely out of sync. The world is in such awful shape, at least a little part of it, a couple parts of it. But we troopered on, and Friday was actually a pretty decent day. Kind of salvaged the week in my book. You agree with me?
Oh yeah, more than that, it did a few things. It kept us from August turning red,
right?
So that was nice. And actually, if you compare the U.S. market this week to the rest of the world, we did pretty well, yeah, relatively. And really, this week to me was not about Afghanistan. It was about China. Just when you thought that they were done shooting themselves in the foot, they unholstered that thing one more time, pointed it straight at their foot, and took another shot. I really am having a hard time sort of understanding what their goal is here. They have a unique opportunity in that America is a bit weak right now on the international
stage.
Weak
and distracted.
Yeah, and distracted. And instead of taking advantage of that, they seem to be turning on themselves, which is an interesting way to play it. I don't really understand. This week, they decided that successful entrepreneurs were making too much money, and that had to change.
And it was not long ago when they were so proud of their entrepreneurs and all the money they're making.
Right. You never know which
they were creating billionaires faster than any country on earth for quite some time.
And now this is a bad thing, and it must stop today. And
it really caught both of us off guard.
It did.
We had no clue that they could be that stupid, and you got to think at a time like this, it's a look over there thing.
It must be.
What are they distracting us from? And I've got two possible answers, Hong Kong and Taiwan.
Yes, that's very possible. But
we knew that before.
I know. It's a really interesting strategy. And by interesting, I mean I don't understand it at all. So the Chinese market fell 3.3% for the week, predictably, and then their tech shares fell even further. They were not the worst performing market this week. That dubious honor went to Brazil, which fell more than 6%, and then Australia, which just went back into 5 weeks of lockdown, fell more than 5%. France was down 4%. Emerging markets down 4.4%. And the global Dow was off 1.2. So,
and we walked away relatively unscathed.
Yeah, we really did. The U.S. it really held up quite well. The Dow shed 1.1%, but the S&P was off just 0.6%, and the NASDAQ 0.7. So that was really due to that rally on Friday. We were down more than that and then had a nice bounce. So the rally was pretty unexpected. The futures were down close to 200 points on Friday morning.
That's when I was starting to feel like maybe the stuff was going to get to the market.
I said on Wednesday, I think it might have been you that asked me how I was feeling, and I said, well, the news is starting to say that we're a correction is here, so mm-hmm. It's definitely not a correction.
No.
Because whenever the news is talking about it, they're wrong.
There's some, yeah, remember that answer. There are some small cap stocks that are in bear market.
Well, yeah, right, and then the energy market is definitely in a correction. There are certain parts of the market, but the S&P is definitely not.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of, call it shape-shifting going on. Things that are conservative, the consumer staples and utilities and such.
Yeah, defensive sectors, energy led the way down this week, shedding more than 7% just this week alone.
I thought it was an overreaction, personally.
Perhaps, but it had been the best-performing sector on the S&P, so some profit-taking combined.
Nobody's on top forever.
Yeah, combined with oil prices going down, it makes sense. They're down almost 15% in August alone, the energy sector is, and oil dropped by almost 8%. Energy is no longer the top-performing sector for the year due to that recent performance. That title now belongs to real estate, up 30% year-to-date. Who knew?
Well, I've been a bull on real estate for a long time, as you know, but only certain real estate.
Mm-hmm.
I like mine in areas, well, this relates a little bit. Healthcare is one of the stronger sectors right now, and the bulk of my real estate holdings are in the medical field, and that is all working out very nicely at this point. So,
yeah, healthcare actually had a nice week. Utilities, consumer staples, and technology, those were the four sectors that gained. Everything else was down. The bond market, gold, and cryptocurrencies all posted gains as well as people look for safe havens from a potential market correction.
Mm-hmm. Angela and Howard were talking about the interest rates ticking just down a little bit again this week, and it's because bonds have been strong again.
Well, people are looking for a safe haven.
They are indeed.
Yeah, that's what happens. Yeah. But they are getting a safe haven. They are not getting any yield.
No. So, if all you're doing is preserving your money, in my book, sit on the cash.
Yeah, a cash versus a less than 1% yield, I'm with you on that. But
especially in a time when it's very possible that interest rates will start rising soon, and then your bond prices are going to go down. Your cash isn't going to go down.
I'm with you. I'm not buying much in the way of bonds these days. We're looking at a bunch of alternative things, different options that aren't going to go down.
I'm still bullish on tips, but I'd be a lot more bullish if we had a 10% reduction in the price.
I'd be buying them like crazy if that happened.
Yeah, but they're in demand, and I don't think it's going to happen. We got a lot more to say about this, in particular the closing of the earnings season, which was a real bright spot, and I think it bodes well for what's coming up in business, and what's coming up in business bodes well for what's coming up in the market. So we'll get into that right after a short break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. We have a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Kenny at 904-636-7888. I've got a couple little things to say about 401ks today, so I thought I'd do a 401k trivia question. How much money, free money, does the average American leave on the table every year because they don't contribute up to the employer matching part, on average?
Good question.
And I will take it within a small range, and I'm not going to tell you how small. But
it's a dollar amount?
Not a dollar percentage. Amount okay. That people, the average American, leaves on the table of free money through not accepting or not earning the matching funds, I should say.
Hmm.
So I'm not going to give you any ranges at this point, except one thing. It's greater than zero.
All right.
So there, I've eliminated half of all numbers.
Yes, sort of.
Generous, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Back to the market this week.
Yeah, so one reason that the market was thinking correction this week was a weaker than expected retail sales report. Got people thinking that maybe the Delta variant was making people not go out and spend money. I don't think that's the case.
I don't either.
I think it was just a bit of mean reversion. Retail sales are up almost 16% from a year ago.
You had to read for a while to catch that.
Yes.
The headline was what they wanted.
But if you look at the graph of retail sales, it's
ridiculous.
It looks like the global warming hockey stick.
It does, doesn't it?
I mean, it's crazy.
Only this one's real.
Well,
that's another discussion for another day.
It took just 5 months for retail sales to recover from the initial pandemic losses, and then they climbed another 20% from there. And so it's just not surprising to me that they pulled back a bit. And then also one of the other reasons I don't believe the Delta variant news is that bars and restaurants were one of the biggest gainers in the report,
right?
And then gas stations. So people are moving around and going out to eat and going out to drink, and that just doesn't fit that narrative. And then auto parts and dealers and online retailers were the biggest losers. So people were actually going out more and shopping less. That's what that says to me.
Well, it's in fitting with this change that we've been seeing among younger people, especially to the experiences rather than the assets, the things. They spend their money on going places, doing things, eating out, being sociable, all that, rather than to hoard a bunch of stuff. And you can see it in the retail patterns real easily.
Yeah, that and also just the fact that people are – I think that if you really saw fear from the Delta variant, you would have seen the bars and restaurants category kind of start to plummet.
Yeah.
And it hasn't done that. So
I think most people are defiant of those things now, because we've been pushed too far.
Yeah, it's been, I don't know, not quite 18 months, but a year and a half almost, that we've been somewhat locked down and locked up. And I think people are just ready to get back out there. We've got a vaccine. Yes, there is a little risk out there, but okay, we'll accept it at this point. And I think that is
attitude. You're seeing a lot more breakthrough cases, which is the simple way of saying you've been vaccinated but then got it. But what you're not hearing much about is it's not severe, it doesn't last long, and it doesn't kill you.
And it's still pretty rare to get a breakthrough case.
It is pretty rare. Yeah. Texas governor for one.
It does happen.
Yeah.
I think there were 3 senators this week as well.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, you've got to wonder, were any of those false positives? I'm not going that deep into anything.
I don't know. It's at this point, does it even matter?
Nope.
One thing we've been discussing a lot recently is housing. There's a little bit of housing information this week. Home builder sentiment, which has been sitting at or near all-time highs, it started to come back to earth a little bit, and this month that trend continued. The index was down 5 points to 75, which is still very high historically, but it's now clearly in a downtrend where it has been in a solid uptrend for quite a while. The Midwest and the South were responsible for the decline, and the Northeast and the West actually saw an uptick this month. So not sure exactly what that means, but home builders are not quite as bullish as they were a few months ago.
Yeah, and remember that the bullishness can be a leading or a lagging indicator, too. I have a feeling this was a reactionary rather than looking forward.
I think
it's backwards.
Looking. I think some buyers are getting a little turned off by the prices. Prices are very high despite low interest rates. So maybe they're pulling back, and maybe the builders are seeing that. It's definitely not as hot. I heard Angela and Howard mention that there's many bidding wars now as there was.
They've
a
gone
few
from
ago.
Virtually everybody or every house
right.
to being a little
some
more
houses,
rare.
Yeah,
the really good ones, the one they were talking about today, apparently is really nice, and they're expecting a little bidding war on that. But that now is not the norm from what I've gathered.
Right. So we're not at a normal market. It's still a seller's market, but it's closer to somewhere in the middle than it was a few months ago.
Yeah. And I might add, to me, that's a very good thing.
Yes.
I'm in the market.
No, I mean, even talking to Howard and Angela, it was it's very stressful when it's when the market is one-sided and either side, because
You're working for your customer, you're trying to get a deal done,
and you can't do it.
No.
And they're getting angry, and it's
you got to tell them to take a checkbook to the thing and say, how much am I going to write this for over what they're even asking?
Exactly. And that's not a pleasant experience for anyone. So
no salesman would be enthralled by that.
No. So it's good that it's getting back to normal. Hopefully the price increases slow down. I don't think we're headed for a drastic price decrease, but
we're still, the nation's in a shortage condition.
Right, right. And we've underbuilt for since the Great Recession.
Yeah.
So.
It's 14, 15 years we've been underbuilding.
Yeah.
If you look, I know all real estate's local and all that stuff, but the national supply and the national demand and the growth in the population are not in balance, and therefore I cannot see the word bubble being applied to anything here except for the price of lumber, which is already self-corrected.
Yeah, now it takes a little while to work through the system, but yes, that is correct. Earnings season unofficially came to an end this week. Yeah. There'll still be a few more companies reporting, but the bulk of it is over. And I have to say, it's one of the best I've ever seen.
Me too. And I don't remember numbers like this.
No.
To me, it's rare on the earnings side, but on the revenue side, it's unbelievable.
Really unbelievable. 75% of companies beat on their earnings, and over 80% beat on revenue, which is just...
It just doesn't happen.
Insane. 20% of companies raise their forward guidance, while only 5% lower. I've never seen results that strong. It's really... It speaks very well for the third quarter and the rest of the year.
Yeah, remember, under Regulation FD, any CEO who starts giving guidance forward and it doesn't meet it, they're going to be looked at with raised eyebrows.
I mean, it's okay if you miss it, but it has to be in good faith that they made that estimate.
Yep.
And there's a lot of pressure to most CEOs these days because of the rules want to under-promise and over-deliver.
Exactly.
Yep. And so the fact that 20% are raising forward guidance, that means that there's way more out there that are probably just too hesitant to do it. It makes me bullish on the rest of the year.
Yeah, and the triple plays, as they call them, where they beat on revenue and beat on earnings and up their forward guidance, those lists are getting real long.
Yeah.
There's a lot of companies in a lot of different industries out there that are very bullish on their market, not the stock market, but economics drives the market, except for the little day-to-day glitches that can be political or whatever.
Yep.
Exactly. So I think that we're still saying the same thing that we've been saying along.
Yeah, we haven't changed that at all.
I think it's going to wind up a good year.
I agree.
And think about it. You know, we're already up at least 14.2% on every one of the major indices. So we didn't have to do anything more than break even the end of the year, and you got a good year. And I think we're going to do better than that. I could be wrong. But right now, we've got problems in places like Afghanistan and China, and probably what you're going to see out of that is our market doing better than the internationals for a while.
Yeah, and I was getting really bullish on internationals. Now, there's still some areas I think that will do quite well this year,
yep.
But some of the turmoil is going to put a little damper on that. If you own the Vanguard is VXUS. It's everything but the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
You may want to be a little more particular about where you put your money than just international.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, these are things that can change on a dime.
Yes.
As you said earlier, just when you think China can't get any dumber. What are they thinking?
It's such an opportunity to take advantage of us not paying attention right now, and they go and blow it, or I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, just beyond me. So anyway, we haven't changed our stance. One thing I would caution everybody, look over your asset allocation and keep a good one. Do not be skewed and don't do stupid things. Panic selling is one thing that people do, and it never works out well. I wouldn't be looking at that unless our outcome between now and December starts to take a really, really strong downturn. Stay the course, but stay it with a very good asset allocation. And if you need some help with that, I know some people who could help you. You can get a hold of us here at the show, 904-222-8255, or at Van Wee Financial on the internet and office phone or anything. If you have any questions or comments or concerns, it's pretty easy to come and see us.
Yeah, anytime. You can schedule right online at VanWeFinancial.com or give us a call.
Yep. So do not fret too much at this particular point in time if you've got money in the market. I would keep it there. And you know us, we're bullish, but we're not crazy. Right?
Speak for yourself.
All right. Well, we're going to pay some bills, and we'll be back very shortly and get all kinds of stories and items and so on. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we do have the trivia question remaining out there. How much free money does the average American with a 401k leave on the table by contributing less than the matching amount from the employer? And it is a number greater than zero. You want to help set a bracket? All you got to do is dial 904-222-8255. Adam and I were just talking in the break a little bit. There's more lunacy in the country than there needs to be, but that is not news.
No.
The individual items in the lunacy column are the news. And here's a biggie, and this is something we've talked about over and over and over. California gig worker ballot ruled unconstitutional. A judge in, it's an Alameda County Superior Court judge made a ruling that's going to hurt these people. But first, good morning, Dave.
Hey, good morning, fellas. I did a little math in my head. I think it's $16,500.
What was the number? 16?
16.5K. Yep.
No. Because that's too high. What they leave on the table, remember, we're not talking about how much they can do.
I said 3% match out of 50 grand is kind of what I was thinking. And then there's a few people that make more than that.
Well, the number of people who can contribute 50 grand because of their circumstances is so small that it skews the average down.
Most people can.
No. 50 grand of income, 3% of that.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, it's 50 grand of income, 16,500?
Or 16.
You mean 1,650?
That's what I mean, yep.
Oh, okay.
Now I can tell this to everybody. It's not as much too high as it used to be, but it's still too high. So you did a great job bracketing for us.
I talk to people all the time and tell them, you're nuts, man. It's grand.
Yep.
There's free money. When you look at your marginal tax rate, that's also free money because you're not paying tax on that.
Exactly right.
Just the math.
Keep telling them the same thing.
And
we haven't even talked about the compounding of that over the next 30 years.
If you contributed the amount of money that I'll only reveal when somebody else does it or when the show ends, if you put that for 20 or 30 years and you make a return as average market return, even if it's only 6, 7, 8%,
Call it 6%.
Yeah, it's a bundle. It's an absolute bundle.
You got to remember, it's not your money. Once you put it in there, it's Mr. Whoever you are when you turn 70.
That's right.
Exactly right.
It's your future self.
You'll be
money.
A different. Yeah, it's 72 now.
Keep your fingers off.
You are your own financial advisor, and you're doing very well. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Bye.
Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning. I was on with your operator, and I missed his guess.
Is $1,650, and that's too high.
Okay, that's too one. Okay, 1347.
Where'd you come up with that?
Just off the top of my head.
Okay.
Well,
the scientific method.
You're right. How's that off the top of your head?
Wait, exactly right.
The range, the actual number's 1336.
Wow.
So I gave 36 points up and down from 1,000 to 1,000, from 1,300 to 1,372. Yeah, I would have given that to you anyway, just because it's only a rounding error from perfect.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Well, you know what I used to do? I, you know where I worked? I worked at a very big healthcare company, and I contributed every year, and I know what they match. So, their match was much higher than that.
You did some did some fine analysis on that one and nailed it, and we appreciate it.
That was just off the top of my head.
Good for you.
I missed a good portion of the program dealing with COVID. I don't have COVID, but with somebody else with COVID today.
Yeah, I've heard one today, too.
Yeah, what are the Chinese missing? What are they turning their back on? Can you just do
a
second to tell me quick what I missed? Because I'm an avid listener every week.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
We do.
Yeah, Adam, you know a lot about what's been going on. Why don't you fill in?
Yeah, they've just been doing a series of things that are anti-capitalistic. So there are a lot of times in history where China has appeared to be moving towards a more capitalistic society, and then there's a lot of times in history where they seem to pull back and go more towards communism. And apparently we're in the latter right now, because they came out a few weeks ago and banned certain types of companies, specifically education, for-profit education companies, from making any profit. So so that was a big industry, a big growth industry in China, and they just essentially shut it all down. All of these entrepreneurs had these thriving businesses, all out of work, basically. This week, they came out and said that their tech entrepreneurs were getting too rich, and they're going to cap the amount of money that they can make and have.
Okay.
And so all of these things are anti.
That adds up.
Yeah. And so the market hates this.
Well, you didn't even mention shutting down the whole crypto industry, did you?
That was prior. But so they've just done a series of things that, in our estimation, are shooting themselves in the foot and for their economy. Now, they have political reasons for doing all of these things. I suspect that they don't want competition from private education companies. They don't want Jack Ma being more powerful than the Communist Party.
Remember when they disappeared him for a while?
Yeah. He was either
on the run, or they were, educating him.
Yes. Re-education camp.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they put him up in the Uyghur camp.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think, we'll see how it unfolds with Taiwan, but I don't know.
Not good.
So the problem with this, Bob, is that if you look at a company like, say, Alibaba, and you were to do a traditional valuation on them, it's a screaming deal right now.
Yeah. It's down about 20%, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a real bargain, but the political risk right now is so high because of the series of moves that the Chinese have done that nobody wants to touch it, and everyone's selling like crazy.
And it's one thing after another, and we shake our head every time and said, well, this is crazy. Certainly that's not going to last, or they're done now or something like that, and yet they keep finding new ways to shoot themselves in the foot.
Well, and I think that they're doing this to clean up what they have internally before they try to seize Taiwan.
It's very possible.
I think there's a master plan there.
Yeah, and don't forget Hong Kong either.
And exactly.
It's bad when two things have happened. One is they start talking about these things as reunification rather than taking over, and the other one is when they declared they won the Olympics because they added in all the medals that were won from Taiwan and Hong Kong and put them on the mainland, and therefore they nosed out ahead of us. Is that some kind of a subtle clue? Because I caught it.
It's easy to win a game when you move the goalpost.
Exactly right. All right, well, I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll get your name and address, and we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales. I appreciate it, and nice job.
Thank you, sir.
That was quite a shoot from the hip guess, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was.
But it was based on logic. That's the part I really like. I keep telling everybody the smartest group of people in the world are radio show listeners, and they keep proving it to me time after time. Anyway, good job, Bob. The gig worker thing. For those of you who are not maybe totally familiar with this, California passed something called Proposition 22. You know how Californians love the word proposition. California was making a law that required gig workers, which can be people like Lyft drivers and Uber drivers. It can be people who sit home on their computer and do a gig at a time and get paid for it. They're independent contractors, 1099 people. And California wants to put them all out of business because they would rather have people paying their, quote, employees, if you turn them into that, for vacations and holidays and all that stuff. So 58% of the people in California voted to overturn the gig worker rule, in other words, to pass Proposition 22. Well, the Alameda County Superior Court judge just ruled that the law violated California's constitution because, ready? It overturned the ability to reclassify them and provide benefits, which is redundant or something. Anyway, we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have, I want to go through this again. A California judge shot down all by himself Proposition 22, which allows people to follow the law and work as independent contractors. And he did it. And I reread this over the break. And he did it. He overturned a California law requiring them to reclassify their drivers and provide benefits. And he did it because the legislature was able to define app-based drivers as workers subject to workers' comp. And he thought the legislature ought to be able to tell people how to classify their employees. Is it me? This is just absolutely nuts. Now, that's the bad news. Good news is that it is still in place, and it will be appealed to a higher court. Bad news would be it might be the Sixth Circuit or the Ninth Circuit, or Circuit, interchangeable. And the good news is that Trump did a real number on the Ninth Circuit, and there's a lot of conservatives on it now. If California is able to repeal this thing that 58% of the voters agreed with, I will promise you it will not stop until it reaches the Supreme Court. This is a biggie. We have a Fair Labor Standards Act that defines who can work as a what, a gig worker or an employee. And the biggest part of this is the number of gig workers today and the amount of money they make and the political power they can wield is astronomical.
Oh, compared to just even a few years ago, it
yep.
is.
And you know what will happen? If Uber and Lyft are forced to make these people employees, the only real big upshot of that is going to be you won't be able to get a car when you want one.
That's right. The whole system works because of the way it's set up.
Exactly right. I was very dubious when it started out until I figured out what was actually going on, and I quickly got on board, if I might.
Yeah.
Couldn't help myself.
It's genius. It is.
All right, back to 401ks. Good news from the 401k front. Every year, Fidelity does a study of their internal 401ks and IRAs and reports the results, and the emphasis is on millionaires, what we call 401k millionaires. The number of 401k accounts with balances of at least $1 million grew 84% year over year to 412,000 just at Fidelity. That's pretty good. The IRA number is also huge. It went up to 341,600, which is more than a 64% increase. So overall, the retirement account holders at Fidelity produced 84% of 74% of new millionaires. That is a good thing. The market was up nicely. S&P rose in that time period 38.6, and the NASDAQ jumped 44.2. But also, it's not bad news for the people with less money than that. Non-millionaires, average 401k held 129,300 at the end of the second quarter, up 24%. And the average IRA was 139,000, a 21% gain compared to a year ago. That's all pretty nice stuff, I think. The problem among white families, about 25% don't have a retirement plan for people of color, as they say, minority groups, it was more like half do not have any retirement plans. And that, people, is a tragedy.
Huge, yes.
We've got to get more people on board and aware of what's available out there. Some of it, I'm sure, is from unemployment, and others of it, just lack of understanding what's there. But it's getting better, but we got a long ways to go. Now, of course, all these articles that we get from the internet are a little bit slanted, and this one had to remind people two times in a short article about Peter Thiel, the fellow that we've been talking about with his $5 billion Roth IRA, all perfectly legal, of course. So now the usual idiots in D.C. are proposing that once a Roth IRA reaches $5 million, you can no longer contribute. Well, let's think about this. A Roth IRA gets to $5 million. You think that person is going to be in a position to contribute, or might they be making too much money?
Backdoor.
And if so, they're going to go through the hassle of doing a backdoor Roth IRA?
For $6,000.
For $6,000?
Yeah, probably.
$7,000 if they're old
enough. I mean, maybe, but...
Come on.
Yeah.
In other words, why are we making provisions in a law that's hard enough to pass anyway that would affect a couple of people?
Seriously.
Whenever you target a person, whenever you target a small handful of people and make a law because of it, you're going to shoot yourself every time.
It's, yeah. And the way that Peter Thiel did that is he's founded PayPal, this hugely successful company, and he happened to put shares of it into his Roth, which is perfectly legal. But, I mean, what are the odds of PayPal becoming PayPal? And, I mean, the...
Today, 100%.
Yeah.
Back then, it's 0.0002.
It's like a one in a zillion chance.
Peter didn't win every time he started anything either.
No.
Not by any means.
He
just happened to have the foresight to put his founder stock in a Roth IRA, which he contributed $2,000.
Exactly.
At the beginning.
Crazy.
good for him, I say. Ain't that America?
Exactly.
But now, of course, a lot of the usual jealousy is out there, the class envy types. It's just an abomination that one man could have that much money.
He is not a liberal.
He's
a libertarian.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, if he was a Democrat, I think this would be a little bit less news.
Yeah, I have to agree. You had some things on 401k plans.
Yeah, I did.
Also,
Vanguard actually also put out a study of their 401k balances this week or recently. And they did it by age. They broke it down. They did the average balance and the median balance. And I'll be honest, it's a little depressing. If you're 22 to 25 years old, the average balance is $5,400. Now, that's okay.
Yeah.
No problem.
That means you got started.
Just getting started. Yep. If you have $5,400 in your 401k by age 25, I think you're actually doing a decent job. At 25 to 34, that average balance grows to $26,000. So that's okay. I mean, you're on your way. 35 to 44, that grows to $72,000. Now, that's where I start to say, I think you should really be targeting the six-figure range by your mid-40s especially.
That tells really me a couple of things. I bet a lot of that is because people cash out their plans when they change jobs. And
sometimes.
A lot of it is from not being aggressive enough at that age in your investing.
Yeah.
And those can hurt the whole
thing. And the 35 to 44 range is where you should really start. If you are maxing your 401k, not just contributing up to the match, but maxing out at $19,500 a year, you should start making some changes and figuring out
those are the people that are leaving $1,337 on the table.
Yes, exactly. So then the average 401k balance from 45 to 54 climbs to $135,000. Now, you're getting pretty close to retirement by age 54. It's on the horizon. Yeah. You can see it. And that's
going to
provide
you, divide that by 25.
Yeah. So then the really scary one is from age 55 to 64, the average 401k balance is $197,000.
But The median
is $69,000.
And that means half of the people in that age group have less than that.
Right.
And half have more than that.
that's not enough to retire, and you are basically at retirement age.
Yes, so, and reminding people that even $1 million in that plan is only going to provide you an income of about $40,000 a year.
Taxable income,
taxable income, so right, then, unless you get it all in a Roth.
Right, lucky. But if it's in a traditional plan,
right,
you will be taxed on that. That's just not enough money. We need to do better.
We need to do lots better. So any of you folks that have kids and you know they're not started yet, give them a boost.
Yes.
And if they are started, tell them to ramp it up as much as possible. We've been talking a lot over the last few weeks about the shortage of chips in the auto industry. This one is kind of the one that takes the cake. Toyota said yesterday it was cutting auto production in Japan by 40% next month because it doesn't have enough chips to put in its vehicles.
Wow.
That is tragic. Absolutely tragic. On the retail front, Amazon is going into department stores. I love that. let's see. The business model of Amazon is that
they killed department stores.
Yeah. By direct to your... Yeah. Is it me?
I don't know. I don't get it either.
All right. Well, we'll find some more fun stuff for next week. Thanks for listening. We'll be back here same time. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.